16. Little Key, Heavy Door. The next day, at noon, the drawing room at Little Key was full of people. Every seat, including those borrowed from Peepers HQ, was occupied. Poirot, Sergeant Gidley, Inspector Marcus Capling and I sat on straight-backed chairs in a row closest to the door. Helen Acton, with an unreadable expression on her face, sat on the piano stool with her back to the piano. I imagined her turning, lifting the instrument's lid and starting to play, though it was hard to fathom what sort of music would be appropriate for an occasion of this type. Also present, and seated on the more comfortable armchairs and sofas, were Sydney, Lillian, Daisy and Richard Devonport, Oliver Proud and Godfrey and Verna LaViolette. "Ladies and gentlemen," Poirot began. He was at once interrupted by Oliver Proud, who said, "What about Percy Semley? Should he not be here too?" "No," said Poirot. "I will speak of him later, for he is important, but his presence is not required. Let us start, then, with the facts. We have two murders to discuss today. The murder of Frank Devonport and the murder of Winnie Lord."
"Winnie," said Lillian. "Then are we to assume—"
"It is not an assumption, madame," Poirot cut short her inquiry. "It is a fact. The body found in this room was the body of Winnie Lord."
"Good gracious," said Richard Devonport. "Who would want to murder Winnie?"
"The killer's identity will soon be known to you all," said Poirot. "For now I will say this. It was very important to Winnie's killer that she should not be identified as Winnie. That is why her dress, handbag and shoes were stripped from her body and burned in the fire." He pointed at the grate. "Any of you might have recognized these items as belonging to her, for they were not new. By removing the recognizable items and leaving only the brand new green hat and coat that she had never before worn in this house, somebody, not necessarily her killer, ensured that Winnie could not be identified."
"Who killed her?" asked Lillian. "I should like to be told straight away."
This was met with a general murmur of agreement. "Madame, there is an order I have decided upon, and I should like to adhere to it." Poirot looked around the room. "Whoever burned the clothes of Winnie Lord, so that no one would know who she was, also destroyed her face for the same reason. Now, let us think who the killer of Winnie might have been. Not Helen Acton, who was in Holloway Prison at the time. And if we believe all of the accounts that we have been given, then most of you were with at least one other person when Winnie was murdered. Only one of you was not. You, Madame LaViolette."
"I didn't kill her," said Verna. "Godfrey, I didn't. I wouldn't. What could I possibly have against poor old Winnie?"
Her husband reached over and patted her hand.
"I know you didn't, Verna. Be quiet. Let Monsieur Poirot say his piece."
"Verna LaViolette, also, might have pushed Frank Devonport to his death," Poirot went on. "She was upstairs when he fell from the balcony. So were Daisy, Sydney, and Lillian Devonport, and so was Helen Acton, who confessed almost immediately to the murder of Frank. Everyone agrees that Richard Devonport, Oliver Proud, Godfrey LaViolette, and Percy Semley were downstairs when Frank fell, so they cannot have killed him," said Poirot. "Winnie Lord also was downstairs, preparing dinner. She too is eliminated from suspicion."
"Is the answer not immediately obvious?" said Lillian. "There cannot be two killers roaming around Little Key. It is quite impossible. Surely that means both murders must have been committed by Verna."
"Your loyalty is touching, dear."
Verna regarded her old friend with cold eyes.
"Helen Acton killed Frank," said Sydney gruffly, staring down at his feet.
"Yes, I did," said Helen. Mr. Devonport speaks the truth. You should listen to him, Monsieur Poirot.
The same person did not commit both murders, Poirot announced. Madame La Violette, in fact, committed neither murder. And, regrettably, Madame Devonport, what you decree to be impossible is true. There are two killers at Little Quay. Both are in this room now.
How horrible, said Richard.
Madame La Violette, you might not be a killer, but like Ellen Acton and Daisy Devonport, you are a liar. You and your husband did not decide to sell this house because you are in financial difficulty. I spoke 2 days ago to your banker in London. He told me that you have been extremely wealthy for as long as he has known you. Why, then, did you suddenly decide to sell your home at Kingfisher Hill, and why did you lie about your reason for doing so? Fascinating, though it might be to hear the answer, what has this to do with the murder of my brother? Daisy asked. Poirot smiled. You think that I waste time on trivialities, mademoiselle? No. These little details, apparently unconnected to the two killings, are vital to know. They are the little key that will open the heavy door.
Financial difficulties, Godfrey Laviolette muttered. What a stupid lie.
Monsieur Laviolette, you felt no obligation to tell your good friend Sidney Devonport what it was about the Kingfisher Hill estate that had made you want to leave it as soon as possible, selling your house for much less than it was worth. You said, did you not, that it was not something that would have disturbed the Devonport family at all. Eh bien, you did not believe you were concealing from them something that might have put them off. What could this mysterious feature of the estate have been? Poirot wondered theatrically, rising from his chair to walk around the room. I asked Percy Semley's Aunt Hester, who is a keen and meticulous observer of life at Kingfisher Hill. She told me that immediately before the Laviolettes decided to sell Kingfisher's Rest, as this house used to be known, only one thing changed on the estate. The gate porter. Esther Semley objected to the appointment of the new gate porter, and she happened to mention that only one other resident supported her in her objection, a Lavinia Stent. This assisted me greatly, for if Lavinia Stent and Esther Semley were the only two who disapproved of the new man, that meant that Godfrey and Werner Laviolette had no reservations about his appointment.
He's a thoroughly decent and amiable fellow, Godfrey said.
Poirot gave him a look of warning. Then he said, there was, of course, another significant change at Kingfisher Hill at the same time that the Laviolettes decided to sell this house, or a short while before they made their decision, I should say. The Devonports announced that they intended to buy a house on the estate. They plan to buy Hester Semley's house. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what made Godfrey and Werner Laviolette so eager to leave. If it was not the new gate porter, and nothing else about the estate had changed, why, then it can have been nothing else. Madame Laviolette, I am right, am I not?
Aren't you always?
Said Werner dryly, eyes downcast. Poirot went on. Most people who buy houses here seek an idyllic rural retreat from their busy London life. The Laviolettes were no exception. Godfrey Laviolette and Sidney Devonport were firm friends. Their families spent considerable amounts of time in each other's company. The two men had made their fortunes together, worked together on the game Peepers. I winced at the mention of it. Which is perhaps why it was so important to the Laviolettes to think of this idyllic country estate as theirs alone, not something to be shared with the Devonports. To have them visit was one thing,
But the idea that their friends were about to buy a piece of their private paradise. No, c'est insupportable. Yet what could they do? They owned only one house, not the whole estate. They could not prevent Sidney Davenport from buying a home here. So, they solved the problem in the only way they could. Rather than share their private retreat, they would leave it, and quickly. I imagine, Madame La Violette, that you did not wish to share ownership of Kingfisher Hill with the Davenports, even for 1 week, if you could avoid it. And the only way to avoid it was to sell them your house before they could buy Hester Semley's.
This makes little sense to me, said Richard Davenport. Everyone with a country home at Kingfisher Hill shares the land and the facilities with many other families. That is rather the point of country park estates of this sort, and everyone knows what they're getting when they buy in.
Sharing with strangers is one thing, said Verna La Violette. Having your private little getaway ruined by invasion from your London friends, people who belong to another part of your life, that's quite another.
Do you mean to say that Monsieur Poirot is right about your reason for selling? Richard sounded astonished.
Verna shrugged.
As I said before, isn't he always right?
But Verna, you and Godfrey are always here, said Oliver Proud, who seemed to share Richard's bewilderment.
My word, are you boys as cloth-headed as you seem?
Verna replied.
Do you know what prevents you from understanding? It's a characteristic of men. You focus only on the intellectual side of things. You never stop to imagine how a person might feel. Monsieur Poirot, now, he's different. He understands the human heart, don't you, Monsieur Poirot?
Verna let out a long sigh.
Selling this house meant that Kingfisher Hill was no longer ours. It was the Davenports. I was willing to visit them at their home once it was no longer mine. Sure, why not?
You were willing, yes, said Poirot. But were you happy to do so?
I had no choice, she said in a flat voice. Godfrey and Sidney were obsessed with peepers, which meant they wanted to be together all the time. I could have stayed home on my own, but where's the fun in that?
Tell me, madame, where was the fun for you in coming here to stay with the Davenports?
There was none, I've just told you. Godfrey was here constantly, so I had no choice.
You did not then find it enjoyable to come here and indulge your hatred of Sidney and Lillian Davenport?
A sly smile crept across Verna La Violette's face.
Now that you put it like that, she said.
Catchpool and I could not understand it at first, said Poirot. You were described to us as kind and thoughtful, first by Ellen Acton and then by Esther Semley. Yet in our presence, you always seem to be something else. There was the cruelty, always, below the surface of your words and your comportement. Only later did I realize. Catchpool and I had only ever seen you in the company of the Davenports, the people who, as you saw it, had driven you out of Kingfisher Hill. And you find it impossible, in Sidney and Lillian Davenport's presence, to feel kindness and sympathy towards them, n'est-ce pas?
Verna looked at Daisy, then at Richard. I don't bear either of you two any ill will, she said. I hope you know that.
I know it, said Daisy at once. I remembered that Verna La Violette was one of the people to whom she'd given a copy of Midnight Gathering. Was Daisy fond of Verna, I wondered, precisely because she sensed the older woman's resentment of Sidney and Lillian?
Lillian didn't even ask me how I'd feel if they bought a house here, said Verna. Can you imagine? Not even asking?
Madame La Violette, you did not only lie about why you sold this house, said Poirot. You also lied about seeing Lillian Davenport walking down the stairs on the morning of Winnie Lord's murder. You saw no such thing. You merely wished to implicate Lillian, hoping for purely malicious reasons to see her accused of this murder. Both she and Sidney contradicted your account. They both swore they were together in Lillian's bedroom between 10 and 11, and that neither of them left the room. So, you needed to do two things in order for your spiteful plan to work. Cast doubt upon Lillian's alibi and invent an alibi for the two people who did not have one, Daisy Devonport and Oliver Proud. They did not walk together in the garden that morning. You lied about that, Madame LaViolette. You knew at once, did you not, that it must have been either Daisy or Oliver who had killed Winnie Lord. Werner said sullenly, I did not know it was Winnie, but yes, something was going on in the drawing room. I was watching through my half-open door. Oliver came out, Daisy ran in, and I saw Daisy a little later wearing different clothes. Mine had blood on them after I smashed up Winnie's head, Daisy told Poirot. Her father made a growling noise. I put clean clothes on and burned the bloody ones along with Winnie's. You are contemptible, Werner, said Lillian quietly. Well, it takes one to know one, sister. Werner looked wildly around the room. Will you all quit looking at me like that? Lillian's nearly dead anyway. What difference does it make? I like Daisy and Oliver, and I didn't want either of them to get into trouble. They must have been surprised and delighted to hear you invent for them this walk in the gardens that did not take place, said Poirot. Eagerly, they rushed to confirm the story and be cleared of suspicion. Mademoiselle Daisy, perhaps you would like to explain the note that you wrote and left on the body of Winnie Lord for the police to find. May we all hear what was written in the note, please? Sergeant Gidley recited its contents. You sat in a seat you should never have sat in. Now here comes a poker to batter your hat in. We all listened as Daisy told us about the day of the journey by coach, provoking much exclamation and the occasional gasp. What a talented storyteller she was. She made it sound 20 times more exciting than I could have. She omitted no detail and sounded rather proud as she recounted the story she had invented for Winnie to tell us. The mysterious stranger, the warning about the seat. When she had finished, Poirot took over the narrative once more. Daisy Devonport knew that the warning from the nameless stranger was an alluring mystery that Catchpole and I would find irresistible. She was free to make it as tempting and outlandish as she wanted, knowing it would never be resolved. The precise opposite, in fact, was true. It needed never to be resolved in order to maintain its grip on our imaginations. She used the exact same logic when she wrote the note and placed it on Winnie Lord's body. It was a deliberate attempt to occupy my thoughts with deductions that had no possibility of ever leading to an answer. But the note was a trick. There was no true answer. And for as long as Catchpole and I were busy, wondering why somebody would kill this poor woman merely for sitting in the wrong seat, and how this came to happen at Little Quay when Joan Blythe from the coach had no connection to this house, we would be unable to make progress towards solving any of the real mysteries. This was the thinking of Mademoiselle Daisy, who both did and did not want the body to be accurately identified. She wanted me to identify the murder victim as the woman from the coach, a complete stranger to this household. That is why the green hat and coat were left on the body. At the same time, she wanted no one to know that the dead woman was Winnie Lord, or that Winnie and Joan from the coach were one and the same person. But Winnie was your friend, said Werner LaViolette to Daisy. Why on earth would you want to kill her?
I did not, Daisy said sadly.
No, mademoiselle, you did not. Poirot agreed. He looked around the room. What most of you do not know is that Daisy Devonport confessed to Winnie Lord
that she had murdered her brother Frank. She did not kill Frank, somebody else did. But Daisy entertained a fantasy of confessing publicly to the crime. The first person to hear her false account was Winnie Lord. She told Winnie that she, not Helen Acton, had killed Frank, and that she planned to confess this to the great Hercule Poirot, who was waiting nearby to board the same coach. Furthermore, she offered Winnie a significant amount of money in exchange for her silence about the true motive for this murder she had not committed. However, Winnie Lord, despite at first being willing to lie, had a conscience that promises of money could not suppress. She decided she must tell the police what she knew, so she went to Scotland Yard and asked to speak to Inspector Edward Catchpool. Now, here is a point worthy of note. Poirot smiled at me. Pay close attention, Catchpool. Sergeant Kidley, please tell me. When Winnie Lord first asked for Catchpool, had you already told her that he was the man leading a new investigation into the murder of Frank Devonport?
No, Monsieur Poirot, I had not, said Gidley. She came in and asked for Inspector Catchpool before I had the chance to say anything much at all.
Indeed so, Poirot pronounced triumphantly. This, Catchpool, was the important item you failed to add to your list. You had spoken to Sergeant Kidley after hearing from your landlady that he had news for you about a visit from Winnie Lord, but you failed to ask him this vital question. Did Winnie ask for you before or after being told that you were the one in charge of the Frank Devonport case? If it was before, how ever would Winnie Lord even know your name? Joan Blythe from the coach, on the other hand, she might have wished to tell Inspector Edward Catchpool in particular that she had lied to him and now needed to tell him the truth about a murder of which an innocent woman had been convicted.
You're right, I said. None of that occurred to me, not even for a second. Well deduced, Poirot.
So that's what Winnie meant when she said, I know who disposed of Frank Devonport, and I know why, and it's not the reason you all think. Précisément, said Poirot. She was referring to Daisy Devonport's false motive and her alleged true motive, both of which had been told to her by Daisy. She believed that the false motive would by then be known also to the police. Sergeant Gidley explained to her that Inspector Catchpool was not at Scotland Yard, but at Little Quay. It was then that Winnie Lord learned of the new investigation into the murder of Frank Devonport. Determined to speak to Catchpool as soon as she could, Winnie set off for Kingfisher Hill without telling her mother where she was going or why. Her mother was frantic with worry. When Winnie arrived at Little Quay, this was the knock heard by Richard Devonport from the library. The door was opened to her by Oliver Proud. Naive fool that she was, Winnie confided in him the reason for her visit. She told him she knew that Daisy had killed Frank and confessed to it, but that it was important for the police to know the true reason for Frank's death. Daisy had confessed her true motive to her, and Winnie planned to tell Inspector Catchpool about it as soon as he arrived. Catchpool and I were not yet at the house. We were at Holloway Prison questioning Helen Acton. Monsieur Proud, you invited Winnie Lord into the empty drawing room and closed the door. Then you took a poker from the fireplace and struck her on the head with it. You killed her, did you not? Oliver Proud did not deny it. He remained silent, his face unreadable. Why, Oliver? Richard Devonport was pale with shock. Why would you do such a thing? Daisy, how could you? You knew he did this, and you... Daisy shot him an impatient look. What did you expect me to do, faint and weep? I was shocked, of course. But one cannot indulge in shock and self-pity when there's a practical problem to be solved. Oliver only did what he did to Winnie to protect me. In return, I did what I could to protect him.
How touched you must have been that he had killed for your sake, said Poirot.
You judge the morality based only on the benefit to you personally, mademoiselle. This I see very clearly.
To the others, he said, Monsieur Proud knew that Daisy had already confessed to the murder of Frank, and he had seen that her confession had been believed by nobody, apart from Sidney and Lillian Devonport, perhaps. And Ellen Acton had confessed to the same crime and been convicted of it. At that point, Monsieur Proud believed that his beloved Daisy was not in especial danger of being hanged for murder. He himself did not think she was a murderer. He must have thought she was playing some complicated game of the mind. I imagine that he hoped to persuade her to retract her confession. However, when Winnie Lord arrived with her story of the false motive and the true one, a tale that sounded so much more psychologically credible, Oliver Proud's fears increased substantially. He decided that Winnie must at all costs be stopped from giving her account to Inspector Catchpool.
Oliver only meant to keep me safe, Daisy said shakily. This is all my fault, not his.
And now, said Poirot gravely, let us finally solve the murder of Frank Devonport.
When I visited Hester Simley, she told me of a conversation between Oliver Proud and Godfrey LaViolette that she had overheard. A conversation that took place at her house on the day of Frank Devonport's death, said Poirot. Monsieur Proud spoke of a woman with whom he had behaved in an unprincipled and unchristian fashion. He admitted to have treated this woman poorly. He also mentioned that the two of them had sought the help of a doctor, the same doctor who was attending to Monsieur Proud's dying father, Otto Proud. This doctor had refused to help, and was no doubt shocked to be asked. Ladies and gentlemen, Hester Semley leapt to a most understandable conclusion.
A baby, said Daisy breathlessly.
No, that cannot be. Oliver would have told me. Attendez-vous, mademoiselle. There was no baby. Hester Semley was incorrect to assume that a pregnancy was involved. I have spoken to the doctor in question, Dr. F. Grave of Harley Street. From him I heard the true story. The young woman was a teacher at a school owned by Frank Devonport and Oliver Proud. When Monsieur Proud's father grew so ill that he could not leave his sickbed, he expressed the wish to his son. He knew he had little time left, and he wanted to learn a new skill, to use his mind for something stimulating, for as long as he had a mind left to use. Alors, Monsieur Proud asked this young woman, this teacher, to come to the house and teach the French language. That was her subject, to his dying father. This arrangement worked well. Otto Proud was happier for a while, until his health deteriorated to the point where he could no longer proceed with the lessons. He was close to death, and yet, at the same time, not so close.
What do you mean? Asked Richard Devonport.
By now, the young teacher had grown fond of the old man, who had been such a keen and good pupil. When Oliver Proud told her that in the opinion of Dr. F. Grive, it might be another month before Otto Proud died, the young woman decided that this was intolerable. Oliver Proud agreed. He did not wish his father to spend the next month in agony, with no hope of recovery. Together, the two of them went to Dr. F. Grive and begged him to end the suffering of the old man, to give him a drug that would enable him to pass out of life immediately and peacefully. Alas, the doctor would not agree to the suggestion.
He was a dreadful prig,
said Oliver.
2 hours after Dr. F. Greif had refused to help with this plan, Otto Proud was dead, Poirot told the assembled group. Who was it that held down the pillow over his face, Monsieur Proud? Surely you will tell us now. Dr. F. Greif said nothing to the police because he saw no way to prove it, but he suspected that either you or the French teacher smothered your father to death. He is correct, is he not? This was the unchristian thing that you did together with a young woman? Oliver nodded. We couldn't bear to see him suffer like that. He wanted us to do it. We did it with his full agreement, both of us, together. We agreed. It had to be done that way, or not at all, so that we would share the responsibility. We both pressed down on the pillow. It was horrible, but it was necessary. It felt right. Father was spared any further suffering. You, however, were not, said Poirot. Pas du tout. Your conscience troubled you excessively, as it should have done. We humans have no right to play God, Monsieur Proud. Yes, there is sickness and there is suffering, but it is not our place to decide when life should end. Your conscience knew this, even if you did not. It troubled you so gravely that you decided, shortly after the deed was done, that you did not wish to share the blame. You decided that the smothering to death of Otto Proud was mainly the fault of the young woman who had been your collaborator. Yes. I was vicious and unkind to her. She was the stronger of the two of us. No, not physically, but her will was stronger. I persuaded myself that, were it not for her influence... He did not finish the sentence. Exactly as you had blamed Frank Devonport for the theft of his parents' money, even though you had known about this, too, in advance, said Poirot. You had agreed to it and profited from it. You are a moral coward, Monsieur Proud. Do you think that you can kill once and be untarnished? You cannot. That is why it was so easy for you to take another life, when Winnie Lord said to you words that you very much did not want to hear. You think I don't know what I am, Oliver said bitterly. I know it better than you. I feel terrible about the way I treated both of them, Frank and the teacher. I feel wretched about Winnie Lord, too, and even about your stolen money, Sidney. But I will never regret saving my father from the agony he was having to endure. Never. Please do not torment him, Monsieur Poirot. There were tears in Daisy's eyes. Have you never been afraid of anything? Are you so perfectly moral and pure that you have nothing to rebuke yourself for? I tell you, the killing of Winnie was my fault. Let me hang for it instead of Oliver. Poirot ignored her. Once I had heard this story from Dr. F. Greif, suddenly everything fell into place, he said. At last I was able to explain the most bothersome detail of this whole affair, a detail that appeared to make no sense at all.
What detail? Asked Richard.
Before I tell you that, I wish to ask a question of you, Mademoiselle Helen.
Ask it, she said.
How did you and Frank Devonport meet?
You know the answer to that.
Oh, I do. Indeed, I do.
I didn't. From the looks on their faces, neither did anyone else in the room.
Frank Devonport must have spoken to you of his old friend, Oliver Proud, yes?
Yes, said Helen. He talked about Oliver rather a lot, and they were still acquainted in business, though they no longer saw one another.
C'est ça, Poirot said. Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Devonport did not know about the engagement of Oliver Proud to his sister Daisy. He was estranged from both of them, so how would he know? And for the same reason of estrangement, neither Daisy Devonport nor Oliver Proud knew of Frank's engagement to Ellen Acton.
Why are you telling us this? Lillian Devonport asked. What possible relevance can it have?
Mademoiselle Helen, said Poirot, did Frank Devonport ever tell you that Oliver Proud was dark-haired and handsome?
Helen looked surprised. No? Men do not generally say such things about other men. He spoke only of Oliver's character and their relationship. Nothing whatsoever about his physical appearance, then? No.
Mademoiselle, I have heard now several accounts of how you ran down the stairs, seized Oliver Proud by the arms, and confessed to him that you had murdered Frank. You agree that this is what happened?
Helen nodded.
You said to him, according to more than one person who witnessed the scene, I killed him, Oliver. At that moment, there were three men standing in the entrance hall. Godfrey LaViolette, Oliver Proud, and Percy Semley. They had all just arrived from Kingfisher's View. As Frank's new fiancé, coming for the first time to Little Quay, you had met none of them before. This was the first time you could conceivably have laid eyes upon any of them, yes? I suggest to you, mademoiselle, that you therefore could not have known that the handsome man with the dark hair was Oliver Proud, or that he was named Oliver. You had not been introduced to him, so how could you have known it was he?
And yet I did, said Helen, with a small, sad smile.
Je le savais aussi bien que je connaissais mon propre nom.
Why on earth was she suddenly speaking in French, I wondered. Then I tumbled to it all at once. You are the French teacher, I asked her. You knew Oliver already? Helen nodded.
He was the last person I expected to find at Frank's parents' house. As you say, Monsieur Poirot, Frank also had no idea that Oliver would be here, or that he was engaged to Daisy. Then when I met Daisy and she started to talk about her fiancé, Oliver, well, the truth soon became apparent. It was the same Oliver. Frank was surprised, but not horrified as I was. He had nothing to fear. I was in such a terrible panic, I had to leave the drawing room and go upstairs. All I could think about was Oliver returning from the other house and telling Frank the one thing I had never told him, the one thing I would sooner have died than have him know, that I was a killer, and even worse, that I had kept it from him. Honesty. Integrity. Frank valued these qualities above all else. How could I make sure he never found out? I couldn't think of anything. I was half wild with panic. Then Frank came to my room and I had to pretend to be perfectly all right. And then we heard the front door and the voices. Helen stopped and stared into the distance. It was as if she was watching this scene from the past unfold before her eyes. And then Frank walked out onto the landing, said Poirot quietly. You followed him and saw Oliver Proud in the entrance hall below. Now, imminently, it seemed certain that Frank would discover the truth, and he could not be allowed to know. The man you loved more than anything in the world could not live to see you hang for the murder of Otto Proud, and so you pushed him to his death.
I did not mean to, said Helen.
Yes, I did it, but there was no intention. I was out of my mind, not capable of rational thought in that moment. My hands seemed to move without awareness. And then Frank was falling from the balcony, and it was too late.
Mademoiselle, if you had not intended it, it would not have happened, said Poirot. Hands do not move unless minds make them move. Like Monsieur Proud, you had killed before. On that occasion, you believed that you had an excellent reason for doing so. In the case of Frank, you tried to tell me that no reason or choice was involved. Neither of these statements is the truth. There can be no justification for such actions. And once a first murder has been committed, the second becomes so much easier. The law against killing our fellow men and women is not there only to protect them, but also to protect us from our worst impulses.
You may think and believe what you wish, said Helen. Remember, Monsieur Poirot,
I am not trying to escape justice. All I want, all I have wanted for some time, is to die and be with Frank again. I confessed immediately, and I only lied about why I did it to protect Oliver. I did not want him to hang for what we had done to Otto. I agree with him. To end a person's suffering at their express request when death is so imminent, I do not believe that to be a sin.
The law disagrees, Poirot told her.
As soon as I had pushed Frank and he was falling, I knew that I had made the most appalling mistake, said Helen.
Indeed, you made a serious miscalculation, said Poirot. Monsieur Proud would never have told Frank that the two of you had together killed his father. He wished to protect himself as much as you did.
I realized that only once it was too late, said Helen. Until then, all that I could think was that Oliver had blamed me for what we did to his father. Me alone. Oliver, did you not insist over and over that I'd force that course of action upon you? I thought that at any moment you would look up, see me on the balcony and say, there's the woman who murdered my father. And then... then Frank was falling and hitting the ground. And Frank was dead, and I wanted to die too. Only moments earlier, I had been desperate to avoid the gallows for the murder of Otto. Now Frank was dead. It was my fault. And suddenly the gallows were all I wanted.
So you ran down the stairs and confessed to Oliver Proud what you had done, said Poirot. He was kind to you then, having been unkind the last time you had encountered him. You could afford to be sympathetic this time, Monsieur Proud. Here was a death for which you were not responsible.
Richard Devonport had stood up and was walking slowly across the room to where Helen sat by the piano.
I was so sure you were innocent, he said to her. So sure. Your love for Frank. Well, I never doubted it. I thought it meant that you would never have killed him. I thought that Monsieur Poirot would find out the truth and...
He left the sentence unfinished.
And what, Richard? Said Helen. You thought I would then love you the way I had loved Frank, because you would have been my saviour?
Violently he turned away from her. Poirot nodded to Sergeant Gidley, who rose to his feet and pulled two sets of handcuffs out of his two trouser pockets.
Miss Acton... you are already convicted of the murder of Frank Devonport, and you are soon to pay the price for your crime.
Thank goodness.
Helen closed her eyes and smiled. Oliver Proud, said Gidley, I'm arresting you for the murders of Otto Proud and Winifred Lord.
No, Daisy gasped. No, Oliver, where are you taking him?
She staggered to her feet, as Sergeant Gidley and Marcus Capling led Oliver Proud and Helen Acton from the room.
Stop! Stop at once! Monsieur Poirot, this is quite wrong. Winnie's death was my fault. You know it was. If I had not asked Oliver to marry me, he would not have been at the house when Frank brought Helen here and...
She closed her eyes tightly.
Why can one not undo the past? If only it were possible. Poor, poor Helen. Can't you see that she never intended to harm anyone? I thought you were supposed to be clever.
Mademoiselle, I am afraid that...
No, do not say a word. I don't want to hear it. I don't want Oliver to die, or Winnie, or Frank, or you, Mother. I don't want anyone to die. Let us stay in this room forever, and never open the door. We can tell ourselves the lie that all is well, and that all the harm that's been done can be undone.
I saw an expression on her face then, that I had never seen there before. Peacefulness.
I find that I am able to believe it,
she said with a sigh.
Please, nobody say a single word. Please let me go on believing it for as long as I possibly can.